Hello there. My name is Robert Higgins.
And I'm Kate Tuxford.
And this is episode 96 of Screenwriting from the Trenches, a podcast about the craft and expression and of screenwriting in all its forms from the perspective of writers just like you.
Are we going to be ourselves now?
Yes, that's fine. This week, we're doing a podcast about the writer's block, which I don't, it's afflicted me a little bit, probably a lot. I don't know how you feel about that, Kate Tucker. Are you down with the writer's block?
I have been a victim of the block, which is annoying because I would like to be above it, but I am not above it.
Yeah, you have the block and the COVID. That's a double whammy right there.
Yeah. Yes, I'm reporting to you from COVID headquarters right now. I totally got COVID either on set last week as an extra or on the line striking. Either way, COVID is alive and well, people, so please make sure you get your boosters and mask up.
Right. Also, we are in the unprecedented double strike. So, in solidarity with SAG-AFTRA and the WGA against the AMPTP, we are requisitioning our traditional Twitter drama segment in form of another segment that we're calling the Strike Corner. Take it away, Zach.
It's just another day in screenwriting drama, screenwriting drama, screenwriting drama. It's just another day in screenwriting drama. It's another day in screenwriting drama.
Here we go.
Yeah,
So
so
this
this
one, I didn't see this one, but Kate Tuxford, this one was you.
Yeah, this was we reported last week that Sarah Silverman came out calling actors who were performing projects under the SAG-AFTRA waiver during the strike as scabs. She has come back and rescinded her statement and apologized for that. You know, I think that she's a well-regarded enough person in the community. I'm sure someone talked to her and said, listen, we're just, you know, trying to get by with some of these projects and help actors out. I'm sure she was willing to listen to more sides of it. Although I agree, I think last week we talked about, you know, I think her idea is, you know, stop the pipeline of films to the AMPTP. That's the quickest way through. So
Right.
I don't mind her original approach to it. I think she's just, you know, done something kind to her fellow actors and cut them a bit of a break.
Well, I agree with you. I feel like we both agreed that her language necessarily wasn't right, but I feel like for me, I would have come back like, look, it's not scabbing. It's directly not scabbing because they do have the approval of the guild. But here's what it is. It doesn't change how I feel. That we shouldn't be putting things in the pipeline. We're all trying to not do the thing. And if we're going to put things in the pipeline, let's put things in the pipeline for ourselves. Let's do stuff for ourselves instead of working with baby studios, doing that kind of stuff. So just because they aren't members of the AMPTP yet, but
Yeah.
you know what I mean? Like instead of doing that, why not do stuff for ourselves? But nobody wants to hear that from me, and I'm sure
I
that
do, Rob. I do.
well thank you, Kate Tuxford. But I'm sure somebody came and talked to her and was just like, hey, that's you gotta ease up. But
Yeah. But there was another actor this week that decided to,
yeah, somebody else didn't get that memo. So this one, I was actually all over this one. Stephen Amell, who I'm a big fan of the guy because I loved Arrow. I'm a huge fan of Arrow. And I think I've been pretty vocal about that on this podcast. I love Arrow. I haven't watched Heels yet, which is his new show, but I was a big fan of his. I even braved part of the last season of The Flash just to see how they were going to bring him back. And, they didn't really explain properly why Stephen Amell, whose character was kind of turned into a god, had to use a bow and arrow, but we're just going to go with it. We're just going to go with it.
Yeah.
Just he had a I don't it was Thor uses a hammer. Why can't Stephen Amell use a bow? Anyway, so he apparently what 2 weeks there was a video that resurfaced about him 2 weeks, a week or two after the strike had started, where he was at a convention and he was saying to the crowd that he couldn't talk about Arrow because he's not supposed to be promoting struck companies or shows that from struck companies. And so then he turned around and immediately said, fuck it, we're just going to talk. And then, you know, went about it. And then, of course, there was the statement that he gave that he was frustrated with the union about striking and that it was basically counterproductive to what shows were coming out during the strike and what shows are going to be coming out after the strike. He was saying that this was all kind of disrespectful to that, and that he, you know, it was like he didn't vote for striking. It was a whole thing. And then he seemed to try and take it back briefly. Like there was a whole point where he took it back.
He thinks he took it back.
Yeah, he thinks he took it back, but then he went on TMZ and completely like eradicated that. You know what I mean? Like it was hot and cold. Like he didn't know what he wanted to be. Clearly, he's not a fan of the strike. And he became Twitter's or X's latest villain. And
We're not
just,
calling it X. I'm not doing that.
yeah,
Go ahead, Twitter.
he became Twitter's villain. And it was just, people were just upset. And somebody had posted, hey, shutting the fuck up is free. And I was
Nice.
like, you know what I mean? I was like, you know what? That's 100% true, which is ironic because we're on a podcast. But anyway, but it was just, hey man, if you have a disagreement, like I get it, but this is not the time. You know what I mean? People would like solidarity is solidarity.
And it's one of these things that's like, if you really don't approve of what the union is doing, you can, there's the door. You don't have to be a part of the union. You're invited to join the union. So if you don't want to do it, go and go it alone without them. See what, see how your contract changes. See how the people you work with change. It's gonna be a really different world for him. The truth is he wants all of the benefits and none of the work
Well, yeah, and
of
I,
being a part of a union.
well, the other thing, and I don't want to get into ad hominem attacks, but the problem is that he's on a not a well-known show with a not a well-traveled or not a well-exposed, what's the word? I don't even know what the word I'm looking for. Like like no one's going to, I think it's on Encore or Stars. That's the thing. I don't even know like where it is. I'm pretty sure it's on one of those two. But the fact is, neither one of those is a Netflix, is a HBO Max, is or just Max, is a none of the, they're not
Hulu,
even Peacock. You know what I mean? I know that Poker Face is on Peacock. You know what I mean? I don't know where Heels is. And the fact of the matter is that I think Stephen Amell realizes that, and it's when in a show like this, especially when they might you might get a second season just because someone will say, well, you know, it takes at least a season and a half to sort of figure out where the fuck you're going or what the fuck you're doing, you know, before, you know, they might get a second season and then be like, but if that second season doesn't perform, no goodsies. That's it. You might just get two and that's it. And then you're out looking for another job. And I'm sure that this things like this hurt shows like that are on the cusp. And something that I from what I understand, especially something that they're doing a lot of their own stunts and stuff like that, because it is a wrestling show, it's a backyard wrestling show, and or about an amateur wrestling show. So they're doing the same sort of things that wrestlers do that put their bodies through, and it's a lot. And I'm sure when you're doing something like that, you want to, you know, you want to be able to promote your stuff, and it's hard to suddenly find yourself in a situation where someone's saying, hey, you got to stand with the union. And at the same time, you're just like, I understand, but Jesus Christ, like, this is my shot. It's gotta suck. I understand. So,
Listen, I agree. It's gotta suck. I agree. There's nothing like there are many people who are in the middle of projects who are completing their projects. I had a movie come out in the film festival circuit right as like COVID happened for the first time, and everything, the world shut down. Like there's it's so unfortunate when something you work so hard on a project, projects can take 7+ years to complete, and then when it comes out, something happens. and something outside of your power and something outside of, you know, that does counteract all the work you put into it and all the people, because, you know, none of these things are made in a bubble. But at the same time, solidarity is solidarity.
Right,
it's one
right.
of those things where, you know, it sucks, but you can't go. And this is the problem we're having with SAG as well. The more exceptions you have, the more it doesn't seem like they're standing firm.
Right. Also, I don't know how much, but I know that it is certainly a bit of, like, I would assume that it's part of their livelihood. I mean, you do it, hopefully they're doing it because they love the fans, but I also know that it's not an altruistic thing. But being on the con circuit and doing cons, there's, you know, when you get there, you're surrounded by fans, and I'm sure they don't want to hear it. Like, you can hear the fans like react initially to him being like, we can't talk about Arrow, we can't talk about this, because, and the fans are disappointed because that's what you come for. That's what you bought a ticket for. You want to go up to Stephen
Amell,
talk
about Arrow. Yeah.
Right, and talk about Arrow. That's why I bought a ticket to this thing. And so nobody's really talking about that. It's kind of an unfair position. I understand that you're not supposed to promote things and stuff like that, but he put himself in that position by going to the con in the first place. But then again, I don't know what contracts that he had or whatever like that. Maybe he couldn't get out of it or whatever like that. It was just like, look, I'm stuck here. I gotta, you know, I'm going to do whatever and stuff like that. Then you don't want to disappoint the fans because they paid money to come in and stuff like that. And these are people that they're going to, you know, wherever you are, they're going to stop you on the street. You never know when you're going to run into that fan who's like, yeah, I jumped on a plane and flew up to Toronto see you. And then, you know, to talk about the show. And then you were like, you couldn't talk about the show. And, you know, I came up there specifically to see you. You know, I had saved up all my money and things like that. I think Stephen Amell is at least cognizant of those kind of those things, because people just vomit their feelings all over you about that kind of stuff. And they just, you know, they just like, I did all of this. And you're like, oh, I don't deserve all of that, but thank you. Thank you for coming to see me, you know. And even that, people are just, they're happy to get it. But like, if you stand up in front of a packed hall, you know, and it's just like, sorry, the union says I can't. And they're like, everybody is pissed. They don't care. They do not care. So I do understand where Stephen Amell is coming from. There is a lot of nuance to this, but he's still stupid. He's just not existing.
Yeah, and I think it would be one thing if it was just that one leaked video of him at the con a week before, kind of not sure what to do. I think, you know, most people I saw who posted were like, I could give him a pass because it was new. You know, all the Arrow fans were there. But then he also tried to covertly promo heels on his Instagram. And, you know, I think that's where it's like, okay, buddy, now you went out of your way specifically to do this. And, you know, it's different than, so this is also, there's been some confusion in this, which is actors with SAG are not allowed to promo struck companies.
Right.
But the WGA said, as long as the writers are not being enforced to do it, they are allowed to talk about their work coming out.
Right.
Which is a guerrilla march. Actually, somebody yelled at him for promoting his project, but since he was doing it under his own volition and he's a writer, there's no issue.
Right.
There's a bigger issue because the actors are used for promoting and helping the studios get their marketing out there. So you're going to find that if you are tracking this, the stories of writers and the stories of actors when it comes to promoting, they got different rules. So it's good to keep that straight.
Yeah, there's, like I said, there's a lot of nuance in this conversation, but the bottom line is that Stephen Amell is not handling his press well, and there's just a little bit of tact. I feel like he could have come through unscathed. And if he just explained it the way that I'd explained it, I think most people would have shut the fuck up. But the problem is that even when he was trying to explain what he was saying, he went after the guilt and he started talking about the guilt. And that's not what's at issue here. The issue is the strike and the circumstances. But he made it specifically about the guilt. And in that sort of thing, he was just kind of wrong all day. So it is what it is. Like I said, you know, just there are ways to do it, buddy. There are ways to do it. So anyway, apparently, speaking of struck companies not being able to promote or make any new works, David Zaslav apparently says they saved $100 million last quarter because of the strikes.
Yes. So in order, this is right. They have asked for a sit down with writers in the next week or so, I believe. And then this just came out yesterday, right after that, where Zaslav is like, we actually had a really good quarter and, you know, we saved $100 million, to which anyone who can do some math can really figure this out. So Zaslav is basically trying to brag that they didn't spend any money on product.
Right.
Which is like, if you're a restaurant and you don't buy food for a month, you will save money on that grocery bill, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, oh, we normally spend, you know, $10,000 on groceries. This year we're up to, I mean, this month we're up $10,000 because we didn't buy any. Okay, right. But what are you going to serve at your restaurant, man?
Right. But eventually when the, you know, you didn't store anything either. You didn't buy any frozen foods to put in the freezer. So when the restaurant does reopen, you're going to be fucked. Like,
yeah, you got nothing. Yeah. So I think that, you know, the article came out, I believe, through Variety, and it just, nobody bought it. You know, everybody was like, okay, like the rest of us can do math and basic math, so we know that this is kind of bullshit. But it was one of those being PTP trying to sound unaffected or even bolstered by not paying writers.
Yeah, this is one of those weird things that I just don't understand. Like, when speaking of people that don't understand how press works, you'd be surprised how, I guess it's the sort of the cover of money, you know, where you listen to these folks, the way that they talk about where they talk about other people, and then they'll turn around and say, like, it was like Ted Sarandos last week when he was just like, I come from a union household. And I wanted to be like, if you're trying to say that your father was a union man, I guarantee that he would be ashamed of you. He would be fucking ashamed of you. If he knew some of the practices that you employ in other countries, not to mention this one, but in other countries, he would be fucking ashamed of you. Absolutely. Don't try to put it down like, I come from a, you know what I mean? It's like that the union version of I have a black friend. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I just, this whole, it was gross. Like, you're employing strike busting tactics, okay? You are. And at the same time, you're overseas doing the worst. Like the stuff that Netflix does in order to get things produced in other countries, just so that they can have a backlog of product that comes from other places, is absolutely disturbing. They go through, they do things like they'll have a crew do work in another place just because they know that the union rules or the rules there for production are not the same, such as if they work on something for a day, but they don't shoot anything, they were like building a set, then they don't get paid for that day because they call it, if it's a shooting day, you got to shoot. If there was no shooting, then you didn't, then it was not a shoot day. So you don't get paid for that day. Yeah. That's the kind of tactics that they employ overseas. That's the kind of tactics they like to do with us. But, you know, thank God we have strong enough of a union for that shit that don't fly. But in other countries, you can get away with that. But if my father, you know, if you were to present that to a union person, you present that to your dad and see what he thinks about those practices. See if he's proud of you for that shit. You know what I mean? Don't come at us with this whole, like, well, we saved money. I grew up in a, no, they're just, the cover of money means that these people are so far removed from reality that they can't even see that they're villains. They're just, they don't recognize it. And this is one of the reasons why I keep saying, like, I don't know, like, how they're going to, because all of these companies have shit like that. They all have these tactics that when you look at them, you're like, how are you supposed to negotiate with these people? Because, you know, like, I keep coming back to that.
Yeah, I think it comes down to as well is that if it's not a law or a jurisdiction that they must follow, or there are actual tangible consequences, not talking about like a $250 tree fine, then they're not going to do it. No. And I think that's the thing is at the end of the day, Ted Sarandos and these other CEOs are sitting there going, well, it would be nice, you know, and one thing that Netflix does is they run some very rigorous and unsafe schedules. It would be nice if everyone got, you know, their full 8 hours of sleep or whatever, but our shareholders need to see, you know, that increase. So, you know, the shareholders and showing them they're making money is always going to be priority number one, partly because that's the only reason they're going to keep their job, right?
That was one of the stipulations too.
Yeah. Unless somebody says you can't do that, mm-hmm. literally you can't, we will shut you down. They're going to keep doing it.
Right.
Because there is no stop mechanism. And I think that the biggest problem we always have in our like legislation as a country, but you know, especially when it comes to labor is, oh, well, if they don't like it, they can go work at another company. Or, oh, you know, the bosses, you know, we're going to leave it up to them to be magnanimous, you know?
Right.
And that's bullshit. You know, you have to set the standard somewhere. You have to set a baseline. Because if not, I mean, Netflix would be, well, we're already experiencing this with the background actors. There was another article that came out this week for WandaVision, which is those extras got scanned without their consent. They have no idea what Disney is doing with them.
Right.
So they're already sitting there going to push the envelope as far as they're going to push it, because why not? You know, it's there. It's pushable. So we're going to push it.
Right, exactly. And this, like I said, like you cannot negotiate with people who don't understand basic things like capitalism. Like they were like, you know, if things like, hey, can you pay us on time? That's just, you know, like how many Americans are working paycheck to paycheck? Like most of us, the majority of this country is paycheck to paycheck. And if your boss didn't, like if there was an epidemic of folks who just weren't deciding to pay people on time, there would be riots in the streets. Mm-hmm. There would be literal riots because this country is too close to that issue personally. Like you just like the bosses decided to act like the AMPTP and like any, like say McDonald's started to treat their employees or Walmart. You know what I mean? There would be literal riots because they hire too many people. They employ too many people not to pay their people on time. Like they have to do it because these people are living. That paycheck comes out because I got bills attached to that. I got my whole life attached to that. My rent is attached to that. All of these things are based upon not just like that you're going to pay me my money, but you're going to pay me my money at this time. Because if you don't, then I have major, major issues. I have bills that aren't going to get paid. That means someone's going to come take my car. That means someone's going to come take me out of my house. That means that someone's going to come like, you know, repo like things that I own because you didn't pay me on time. That I did a job for, you didn't pay me on time. And then we come along and say, hey, can you just do this? This is basic capitalism. And they're like, no, I don't think so. I don't think that. That's not something that we can do. And for me, it's like, where's the negotiation around that? If you can't master basic capitalism, we are done before we even get in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, this is one of those industries. It's pretty weird that you can go and make an entire movie, everyone go work on a movie, and 90 days later say, oh, it's going to be a net 90. Everyone gets paid in 90 days after the work is done, and then fuck everyone over.
Right.
You know, if you're Warner Brothers, I guess you're big enough that, you know, I'm going to be honest, like, that sounds really shitty, but mm-hmm. Especially in indie world, that word gets around and nobody's going to show up. But the same thing is the reputation now through these studios is similar, you know, like, for example, if tomorrow Paramount wanted to purchase a script from you and pay you only points on the back end, would you say yes, Rob?
No, because I know that creative accounting means I'm not getting none of that. Yes. Unless it's the gross and not the net. If they ask me for points on the gross, I'll take that, absolutely. But yeah. Don't put gross on the net. No, on points on the net. Nope.
Yeah, nope. Because we all know what happened to A Quiet Place.
Right, exactly. We all know what happened to A Quiet Place. We know what was still happening to Ed Solomon right now. You can't fool me. The information's out there. Sorry for you. Give me the points of the gross or pay me my money up front.
Yeah.
Pay me my money up front.
And that's, and I think that's the thing is right now they're hoping that their names will help them, you know, get away with this bad behavior. But, you know, it's going around in circles and people would be like, yeah, no, I'm not accepting that deal from you.
Right.
You might as well waste all of my time. It's worthless. I love how you laugh. Even you and me know. We're like, no way.
I'm sending the people away with the money. That's why I want them to feel, because that's the thing. You feel so good. I hate to say it, you know what I mean? But this is America. Let's be honest. You know what I mean? Or I know, I'm sorry, we do have listeners from overseas, but that's how it is in America. People want their money. It's not like I'm not saying that y'all don't want your money, but I know I'm saying, like, in America, like, if you don't pay people their money, your word is shit. Your reputation is shit. And because too many people are preparing, like, need that money, you know, to live. That's just the way the society is. So I don't know. I struggle to realize, because I just think we're going to be in for the long haul. I know this is the other thing that they're breaking news, I guess, or not sort of today. I don't know if it's today, but I know that the Writers Guild just got noticed. They sent an email out to their members that the AMPTP wants to come back to the table. And so the Writers Guild is about to go back in, and they want to do committees, from what I understand. There was an article about this. I'll include it in the show notes. But they want to have committees to go through every single issue. And I was like, what a waste of time and money. Like, are these outside people, like, that they're bringing in? Are they hiring more people? You are spending way more money to do this than it would take to just, like, handle this. Just handle it. But they're like, no, we've got to have a committee over whether or not you should get paid on time. So I don't know.
We'll see how it goes. I think most of the folks, you know, there's some, you can tell the optimists from the pessimists. There's some optimists that are like, this could be over in August. Yay.
Yeah.
Which would be great. By the way, if that ends up happening, I would absolutely be happy for everybody. I'm the pessimist, so I have doubt. I think we're going to be striking with Santa hats on this year. So that's me personally.
Oh, Kate Tuxford. Oh, your pessimism warms my heart. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, let's move on to our topic of the week.
Yeah, I was going to say we've gone on. Here we go. So, writer's block. Despite the fact that Kate Tuxford and I seem to have a lot to say about the strike, we don't seem to have a lot to say on the page. And maybe you're feeling like this out there. Maybe you're out there and you're just like, you know, I clicked on this and I heard Rob and Kate rant about the strike, but really what I'm about is, you know, I can't put words to the page. Rob and Kate, what you got for me? I need some inspiration. I need some words. I need you to get me out of my brain funk. And so Kate Tuxford is going to define writer's block. What is
Webster's block? Dictionary says, no, I'm kidding. No. So writer's block, I mean, just to make sure we kind of, there's many terms for it, but essentially it's this ability that, or this thwarting of creative productivity where you're sitting down or you're having trouble sitting down and working on a project that you are, you know, you need to work on. That's probably the simplest way to define it. I think where a lot of people experience writer's block is they have an expectation of what they would like to do on their project, and then they have a gap between that and what they're actually doing. And they're having trouble jumping that gap, right, to get where they want to be.
Yeah, my writer's block usually falls into one of two categories. It's where, like you said, there's a gap, but the gap comes from what my plan was or what I envisioned it was. But somewhere along the line, my characters have decided to go off on other adventures. Yeah. And now I don't know how I'm going to get them to loop back around to where the ending is. I feel like I might be able to connect it, but I'm not sure of the connection. And so that has shut the thing down. The other thing that also shuts me down as a writer is when I feel like there's something that is too big Like there's like when I'm writing something and I'm trying to condense it down to the page, I can see the entire planet, but it's like trying to condense it onto an iPad. You know what I mean? Like, how do I make you see the whole planet on an iPad and on what's going on and make you
Or the
aware of it?
important thing on the planet,
Right.
focus on it.
Right. Where do I focus on? Because there's so much going on. And I think that's the problem that I'm having now in one script where I'm just, I, there's a, due to circumstances that have happened recently, I was writing about something. This is so weird to say. I'm writing about something that it now seems to be a prequel for another script. You know what I mean? Like where the script is about a time in my life, but that time in my life inexplicably links to the current time of my life, which I probably will write about it, let's be honest. But at this point now I'm like these events that I've set in motion, now they have to sort of mold to fit what's going to happen later or what may happen later, because I feel like I have to do that. And I'm just trying to like chase down every one of these like running storyline arcs and corral them in so that this script is not A, too long, or B, something else, because it's not a television show. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of people do that sort of Sam Esmail thing where you get to page 190 and you're like, I'm still in the first act. And you're like, oh, I'm writing a television show, but this isn't a television show. So, it's like one of those kind of things where I'm just like, I gotta pull it in. So like I said, my writer's block comes in one of those two forms.
I think mostly, especially recently, is what I call the why bother writer's block. The why bothers are basically when you look outside and the world is on fire, in some places actually on fire because it's August and we have
Right.
climate change.
Actually
The
on fire.
writer's strike is happening, the SAG strike is happening. You look out there and you're like, you know what the world needs? Another screenplay. It's hard to have. It's hard to have the energy behind it because it doesn't feel like anyone, any, the world doesn't seem like it wants your screenplay.
Right.
And
I gotta say,
you kind of feel like an asshole for even trying to put it out there.
yeah, I actually had a little bit of that problem after the last our last podcast with Mario, because I was kind of thinking, Mario has it right, but you know what? It's more like when you write something like a book, and I have written a book, it feels just more substantial. You know what I mean? Than a screenplay, because there are avenues for that book. You know what I mean?
It's
Somebody
done.
might,
It's done as a book.
right?
It's
It's
complete.
done. Well, not only that, but it has a better chance. It is a chance at telling a story in a way that people understand. You know what I mean? Like a screenplay isn't actually a story until somebody shoots it. It's just an inspirational document, as I like to think of it. It's just somebody, hopefully a bunch of artists will come together and make it a thing. So it's just speculative. That's why we call them specs. But like, a book is immediately, I can give it to someone and even if it never gets published, someone has read my book. You know what I mean? And so I can put it up on Amazon. I can put it up on Wattpad. That's what it's called, Wattpad. You know,
Wattpad.
Wattpad. I can put it up on, there are many different like online places where I can just upload a book for free, just because people enjoy reading books. And then some people can get stuff out of it. And there's a, Wattpad is places like that where people are just sharing books, based on the most obscure stuff. And people are just enjoying it and being a part of the community. You know what I mean? You can promote it on Reddit and different things like that. There's a, what's that? Oh man, Medium is a place where people are posting short stories now, at least pieces of novels and stuff like that, and using that to promote. You can do all sorts of things once you've written that book. It's just, but it's like you said, because it's done. That story is told. But for this kind of stuff, it's for a screenplay, yeah, it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. So I can understand you getting like the why bothers.
So I mean, the other thing, and this is the hard truth, is you might be feeling it, but you have to keep going. And I think there's a couple of things I use to help me get through.
Okay.
Which is number one, I took this advice from, I think, How to Write a Movie in 21 Days by Vicky King, which is, do you have writer's block? Why don't you describe an item on your desk? And sure enough, you'll look over. I remember I did it once. I described my Seagate hard drive in film school. And sure enough, I had a paragraph of descriptions of what my desk was like and the hard drive on it and what it has stored on it. So it's not like you lose the ability to write. That's the point of the exercise, is to be like, well, it's not like you can't write. Or you're having trouble writing is this particular thing.
Right.
And I think it's good to kind of keep that in mind, because sometimes I run into people who, when they're experiencing block, they think, am I a fraud? Am I not a writer? Have I fooled everyone, including myself? The truth is, you are capable of writing. Likely you are blocked on one thing, which is this.
Right. And the other thing I think that trips people up, when you put this in the outline, but it's like people have a hard time giving themselves the permission to write poorly. Mm-hmm. Like, and I understand why this might be, because I don't know if you've ever done this, but I do this all the time where, like, I did this for Wagner's Roost for the first 50 pages, where I just kept going back and rewriting those first 50 pages because I was trying to get to the other things. But by the time I finally figured out what I wanted to do for the next 50 pages, you know, I was shook, because those first 50 pages were solid. They were like rock solid. And so it was just like, ooh, I don't want to fuck this up, because I've already written this to within an inch of its life. You know what I mean? It's already good. I like all the juice pages. Yeah. Right. And so now it's like, are these pages going to match up to what those pages are? Because these are really good. You know, like you've done the whole thing. You've even hedged your bets. You've had people come in and read those pages. And they're like, yeah, this is really good. I can't wait to see where it's going. You're like, yeah. But when you try to do it, you're just like, shit. Because you want them to match up. And you're trying to imagine doing the same amount of work to get these next 50 pages to be like those first 50 pages or whatever it is that you've written.
Those,
you know,
polished, perfected 50 pages that didn't start out there. Yeah, I think that's a hard one, where you're sitting there and it's like you already feel like you've painted, you know, half the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, this is really promising. Now we got to paint the other half. And you just, all you can do is like a stick figure smiley face. And you're right. Like, oh no.
Oh my God, no.
Right. Yeah. And what you're doing is being impatient with yourself, because you will flush out that side. But you want it, you want it to match automatically. You want them to look great automatically. So I think that's where a lot of the blockage comes from, is what you want and picture in your mind is still coming out as, you know, a vomit draft of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason we love the term vomit, Rob and I, and it's not because we enjoy puking as individuals. So probably done that at one point. Yeah. But vomiting for screenplay is also kind of taking off the pressure that something has to be good right away.
Right.
I think the biggest thing that kind of happens in the back of my head when I'm writing is, oh, it's not good. It's not good. It's not good. Well, if that's what you're thinking while you're writing like every single word, then what you're kind of doing is second guessing yourself with every word you write.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why I try to take the pressure off and stuff like that, which is one of the reasons probably why I have so many notebooks. Like I keep like these little notebooks on me, and I write them, and I cheat, because that's, my whole life is based around cheating. So I cheat and I write.
The filmmaker life. Let's
yeah, clarify. It's the filmmaker that. Life is about cheating all the time. And so I write these little scenes, you know, that are probably not that great. They're not that great, but you know what? Not only did I not put them in anything that was substantial, they're just like in a notebook in the back of my pants. Do you know what happens in the back of my pants, Kay Tuxford? It's not something that I want to talk about on this podcast. You know what I mean? There's all sorts of things that happen back there. And I'm just sitting on this writing, you know, just it's, you know, back there where I do things that come from back there. You know what I mean? That's where I keep my writing. Because that's how, you know, that's I'm trying to give myself the mental permission to suck. Just yeah. Like it's fine. It's insubstantial. It's just, you know, it's just stuff that I'm going to fix later. You know what I mean? And I try to give myself layers of cover. You know, I've got the little notebooks that I keep in the back of my butt. And then there's the other notebook that I'm just like dragging around. And then there's the other notebook that I'm keeping kind of sacred. I don't want to lose this one because this one has, you know, the good thoughts that I'm going to eventually turn into the great thoughts. You know what I mean? I have layers of stuff that I get, that I give
things. And yours is literally layers of notebooks all around you.
Right. So that I can just give myself permission to be like, this is, go ahead and be shit. Go ahead and be shit in that shitty notebook. Go ahead and do that because it's just a place where you put your butt. That's what it is.
Yeah, so. And I think the other thing one can do is, much like that, is instead of worrying about the final product, set different goals for yourself. So like you could say, can I write for 15 minutes without taking a break?
Mm-hmm.
Can my hands stay on the keys and continuously write for 15 minutes? You know, if you give that yourself that challenge, yes, you can do that. And I'm sure you will write some shitty, crappy things while you're doing that, but you will succeed at the goal of writing for 15 minutes straight. And likely, and this is why I say write poorly, it's okay, is you're going to look down and there's going to be some things that are ridiculous. And there's something else that you're going to go, oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot one of my exercises is, when I feel like I'm really stuck, what I do is I write, I have my characters monologue to me. I will, like, I literally just start, like, having them speak, like, just talk how they're feeling and what led them to this place. And they're just, you know, the same way that you might talk to your friend and your friend says, hey, what's wrong? What's going on? And then you just like, look, man, this is what happened. And then this is all that stuff. Like the way you talk to a friend, I just write that down. I just have them monologue at me until I go, oh, wait, you said that.
Where did that come from?
Where did that come from? Yeah. And like, okay. All right. Now, like something just to get that thing clicking. And then sometimes that it serves like no purpose. And then sometimes it gets that brain just to go off. And then you're like, oh, okay. Ooh, that's how you feel? Oh, okay. I gotta do that. You know what I mean? Then it sets me off on the journey again. Now I'm back and I'm trying to, and if I have to go through, and this is one of the reasons why I love to write by hand. If I have to go back to other pages, cross things out, and then write new scenes to sort of, you know,
revise
or at least like set it up so that if I'm paying it off on page, like, you know, 45, I want to set it up on page, you know, 21, you know what I mean? That sort of thing. So I'll go back to page 21 where this thing should have been set up and go, yeah, okay, I can get rid of that and just like put it through or add it in and then go, all right, that's great. Which is also the reason why I don't write front to back, unlike some people.
I write front to back.
Yes, you do.
Because I love trees.
I love trees as well, but then you have no place to write notes and things.
In the margins.
No.
No. I just cross it out and then I'll put it wherever I have a blank page, I'll write the new scene.
You're a heathen.
I'm a heathen. Well, I think that it's helpful doing something like handwriting, and I know we've been pretty big stands of it, but what's nice is it does take off some of that pressure of it being a final product, so that's mm-hmm. especially great. What I will do is I will go somewhere with a notebook and a glass of wine or go get pancakes or whatever and say, okay, I've got to write 5 pages in the notebook. And then after that, I can eat my pancakes or drink my coffee or whatever. And it's not a long commitment because often notebooks, you know, short amount of pages. Be surprised that 5 pages come out. And again, this is basically taking your eyes off the final product, which is going to be a done story, and just giving yourselves mini. But oftentimes I run on these people, they're like, I've got a great concept, and they don't do any developing of the characters, the outline, or the prompt, what the premise really, what it means. And so suddenly they find themselves, usually they get their first 20 to 30 pages out of the way, and they're like, it's coming along. And usually those pages are kind of like long and in the tooth and need some editing. And then page 30, they go, what is this really about? And they don't know yet, because they haven't done enough work on it to really know what the meat of it is. They just know, oh, it's going to be a fun premise about XYZ. And, you know, I think that's a big problem with writer's block, is sometimes people jump into the writing process without having answered some of those bigger questions. And then what we have is they sit there going, well, I thought of the beginning. I thought of some fun scenes. I did those. And now I don't have anything else.
Yeah, I struggle with this in terms when I think about writing in genre, you know, for certain things, especially with action, because there's one thing, there are a bunch of tropes in action movies that really bother me. Like, they'll be like, all right, we got to go get the thing. And then they go and get the thing. And then they're like, okay, well, we got the thing, but now because stakes, you know, we got to crack open, we got to crack this thing. It's a computer device thing, and now we got to crack it. But then the villain has done something because we grabbed this thing, so we got to go over here and do the other thing. And so they go over and do the other thing. But then when they get back and they're like, did you crack the thing? And yeah, we cracked the thing and it told us to go over here. But if we gone over here, we could have just not done the last thing at all. We just, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, all right. So the last scene was completely superfluous, because if you just waited to crack open the thing instead of going to chase the villain, then you would have literally avoided all of what just happened and all of the destruction and the death that we all just went through. And I get that it was fun, sort of, but we could have just avoided all that and more people would be alive if we had just cracked the thing that we wanted to do from the previous scene and let it give us the information that we actually needed. Like, we should have done that. And I struggle with things like that in scripts, because like I understand that some people can do it, and you know, you can just sort of suspend your disbelief. Yeah, but I can't. Like, when I'm writing, I'm just like, oh no, that hurts my brain. I can't do those kinds of things.
Yeah, well, I think it's like some people can, again, watch it, suspend disbelief, but others, I think, especially when you like work in storytelling, so you're like, that was a really cheap move.
Right.
You know, that's what I think. My brain is always like, oh, that was cheap. That's kind of
super cheap. Yes. Yes. That do you that know, all the
and,
time.
And it's cheap because it's like a, it's kind of like a first choice. Like when you're working on like a first draft, first choice, you're like, ah, oh, this gets the pages done. But then it never gets kind of improved upon. Or the idea, it's kind of an amateur idea. Like, I've just seen some projects like this where like the idea behind it, like it's the most stereotypical, and then we woke up and it was all a dream, you know, right. And you're like, oh, boo, like, come on, really? You didn't think about this for like two more seconds and realize that like that's a pretty overused ending and it's pretty cheap. Again, I use the word cheap.
Yeah, no, but it is. It's cheap. Like you see this stuff and you're like,
we committed all this time and you used it to go, ha ha, fooled you.
Is there anything more like cheap than when you see like an exposition dump? You know what I mean? It's just like dumped into something. Like when you just like, they're like, oh, it's a flashback that explains everything. You know what I mean? Like, there are ways to do flashbacks. Like, one of the ways that I think is the greatest example of an inciting incident that literally like gets better the more that people talk about it is Harry Potter's origin story, where he gets the scar. The story of what happened, of how that night came together, the layers of it that it goes through over the course of the books, like it gets more layered and more complicated. It's not just about the fact that Harry's mom died to save Harry. There was strategy behind it. Like, Dumbledore told her to do that. He was like, if it comes down to it, die for the boy. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then it was like, Sirius was supposed to be the secret keeper, but they actually made it Peter Pettigrew. And so his betrayal, like the whole, like the layers and layers and layers of it, of like how Voldemort got to that thing, is just like, that's how you do exposition. That's how you do a flashback where it's revealing something. You're like, oh my God. But you can't just, there's too many examples of people just be like, and this explains it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, Let's say if you're doing a first draft and you got writer's block right. and you just need to do a big, take a big old steamy expo dump, do it. I'm serious. Get it all out. You will know the story better. And then from there, you can go, oh, let's put a little of this here. Let's put a little of this here. Don't get, you know, writerly constipated because it's not in a pretty way just yet. So I think the other thing I want to talk about is, are you okay? You know, I think that's a good check to see if you, as the writer, are having problems other than writing.
Right. 100%. I have a big problem where I like to say that my inner voice is out yelling my character voices, because I think of myself as a functional schizophrenic as a screenwriter, because I'm constantly listening and dictating voices. So I think of myself as a functional schizophrenic, but sometimes I feel like my own inner voice is louder than them. And so they'll be like, hey, so we want to do this thing. And then my inner voice is like, really? 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 And then they shut the fuck up.
And then, all I've done for you. Yeah.
And so I'm just like,
why can't you just be something else? Yeah.
Right. So it's a thing. Like, you know, if that, I feel like if you're not okay, then, you know, then you're, how can you sort of be in a place to let your characters out? It's not a safe environment, literally. And there's, you know, I feel like there are ways to handle it. You know, we could, I don't know if we really want to get into the subject of medication and things like that. That's up to between you and your doctor, or, you know, it could be a personal decision for you. But one of the things that I think helps me is a good walk. Stephen King talks about this all the time. Like when he gets writer's block, he takes a walk. And I do this myself. There's almost nothing better than to start, find a track. I have one not too far from my house. I go there, I get in my clothes, my workout clothes, and I just start sweating. Just march my fat ass around the track, just 3-4 times, just go. Just, you know, put some music on or a podcast to get your creative juices flowing and just try to walk it out. You know, Stephen King, you know, famously got hit on one of his walks, but he talks about taking one or two walks a day. And that dude writes like 8,000 words a day or something like that? Something crazy like that? You know, dude's prolific. He's writing two books a year at least.
I'm gonna actually up your advice and say, well, walk is a great thing. I'm gonna even say a great cure is to go full Aaron Sorkin and have a walk and talk.
Ooh.
Because the exercise is good, you're releasing endorphins, your brain is functioning differently than when you're sitting down at your desk. But speaking, the act of like actually sitting, like explaining what you're going through with your project with a friend changes your thoughts. Now you're speaking them aloud, you're using a different part of your brain.
Yeah.
And you have a sounding board of somebody you can, they, you know, they don't have to be a screenwriter. They can go, oh, that sounds interesting, I like that character, or oh, that, you know, that seems like that'd be awful for them. You know, they just use them as a sounding board. And by just speaking out the problems that you're having, number one, maybe they have an idea or a solution for you. Number two, by the time you utter it out, you're literally using different parts of your brain to think it, and you're literally walking and using your endorphins, and you're in a different state of being than when you were sitting in front of your computer. So you will think about things differently.
Yeah, you're in a brain rut, and then you're forcing the blood in your brain to move in a different direction, therefore getting you out of the brain rut. And now your brain is activated in a different place. And so the thoughts are literally flowing through, and then something might bump against each other. And then it's like, oh, okay. But wait, like I've had that happen to me. Like my wife hates it because it'll happen to us out in public. And, you know, we'll be in like the supermarket and doing it, and I'll be talking to her about something, and then I'll be like, and then my wife is like, do you need me to hold the cart now? And I'm like, yes, I need you to do that, because I can't do anything. And I immediately pull out my butt notebook and I start writing. Like that's how it works. So yeah, like there, sometimes you gotta, sometimes you need a sounding board, sometimes you need to get some exercise, you know, just I feel like that could also help. You know, if you started the day maybe with some exercise, or if you ended the day maybe with it, to just sort of get your, you know, what right before maybe you take that time for yourself, you know, to write or whatever like that. Maybe give yourself the chance to sort of get your brain in a different state, get those endorphins, you know, just try and just sort of be good
And
to
this
yourself.
isn't where you need to like go to the gym for 2 hours to come
No.
up with ideas. Although, you know, if that's part of your routine, that's great too. But I mean, even if it's like, you know, taking a walk around your neighborhood, I sometimes set an objective like, oh, I want to go get a Coke at the 7-Eleven, which is half a mile away. So I'm gonna go do that, you
Right.
know,
Take the
and by
dog for a
giving
walk.
take the dog for a walk. Yeah, I was gonna say you this is a this routine, or what I know, some people they get a yoga mat, they learn a few stretches, and they do 10 minutes of stretching in the morning. We're not even talking about like, you know, hot yoga or something scary like that. We're just talking about like, can you get your body more ready, and you know, can you focus your mind on something that's going to help your body be, you know, ready to go for the day? So you can decide those things and be as, you know, low key as you want. But doing something will actually help you kind of be like, okay, we're started. I'm in the headspace.
Right. And this all sort of goes into what your sort of final point, which you've got. I want to hear what you think about it, but for it's to be kind but firm with yourself. And I think that's a great sort of sentiment to end on. You know, how do you feel that applies here, Kate Tuxford?
Well, I think the thing when I run into writer's block myself, or I have students that get blocked, or friends, you know, it happens at any level. That you don't have to be a jerk, because like I said, it can happen to anybody, and it can be really frustrating. But I think the thing is you the instinct is, oh, I'm blocked. I shouldn't sit down and try. I shouldn't
Right.
even bother. I'll just avoid my desk. I'll just avoid working on it. No, you need to sit down and do it anyway. And that's the part that I think people end up, I run into people who are so blocked, they don't even want to sit down. They're like, yeah, I'm gonna write that. And then they never sit down. They never even try, because they already in their mind have decided, without even realizing it, that it's not gonna get done.
Right,
And
right.
so the kind but firm is, you can be kind and understanding, but firm, you have to sit in that chair and work on the pages. Stephen King, once again, has that classic math equation, ass plus chair equals pages. If you don't sit down and actually, you know, give it a go and give it a try, you're not going to get any pages.
Right. My sort of thing is deadlines. You know, that's my way of being firm with myself, you know, because you can be kind to yourself all you want. You say, I'm gonna take the day off today. You know, I'm not really feeling it. You know, there's or you know, something is happening right now. But like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm still moving towards this deadline. And that, you know, because there's a certain amount of pressure, because otherwise you won't do anything. And so, or at least I won't do anything. So for me, I give myself, you know, I try to be as kind to myself as possible, but at the same time, I'm like, hey man, this deadline's coming up. And I wanted to have a script. I would want to be able to do that thing. And I make people hold me to that date, you know, depending on who I'm working with. Be like, hey, you told me you were going to have this script so I could read it on this date. Where's the script? You know, that sort of thing. So, or hey, how far are you in on that script? Because you told me that I was going to be able to have it on this time. Be like, yep, you're right. So that's one of the ways that you can sort of be firm with yourself, like set firm deadlines and then have friends or actors or producers make you accountable. Like you told me you would get it to me at this time.
And that's
So,
again where you need to practice setting deadlines that are realistic. And again, this is that new writer, like, I'm gonna have it done and perfect in 2 weeks. No. Like, be honest with yourself, be realistic, sit there and go, okay, how many pages can I do a day realistically? Not, I'm gonna sit and write 30 pages a day. Can I write 5, 10 pages in a day? If you write 5 pages a day, every day for a month, you will have a draft.
Right.
You know, done. No question asked. So you don't have to put in your head this like Herculean effort where you're going to sit and bang it out. You just have to go every day and chisel away at it. And, right. you know, if you, the problem is if you start talking up a game to your friends or whatever that, oh, I'll have it to you this week. And then you don't have it. And then, you know, oh, okay. I'm going to bang it out next week. I'm going to bang it out next week. Eventually people are going to go, this person's not serious. It's never coming.
Right. 100%.
And so you've got to tune in a little bit and be realistic with yourself as well, and then commit to it.
So that is our little treatise on writer's block. You guys, yes. I hope we gave you some tips, some cool stuff, to things to help you try or things to help you get forward, or at least just talking at it out loud gave you some life. And you were like, oh, these guys are just killing me with the song. And I'm glad to hear it. And, you know, it makes me feel less alone. So I hope that we've been able to help you guys out there. But now it's time to move on to what are we watching, consuming, writing. K-Tuxford, why don't you start us off this week?
Well, so I can't go to the movies. I was going to see Oppenheimer this Tuesday. But I did not get to go because I have COVID. Yay! So I am quarantining at home and trying, obviously, to stay to my room and make sure nobody else gets COVID, because it's still a thing. And this is your reminder out there, folks, to mask up, booster up, and, you know, maybe don't heavy breathe on strangers, you know, whatever it is you need to do to stay safe. So I've been watching a lot of TV at home. I've been watching the weeklies for Strange New Worlds, What We Do in the Shadows, the Futurama reboot. And before my COVID diagnosis, I did a Ghost Adventures binge with my daughter, who's 21, and we developed a drinking game for it, which we had to like pace ourselves considerably. It was stuff like every time they replay audio with enhanced, you know, audio, you have to take a drink. Well, they'll do it like 5 times in a row. So we had to like, we had to calm it down.
If not, you're trying to die. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, we had Trulies. We weren't doing hard. And then also I am writing and working on my micro budget horror Feed Fifi, and just out of act one. So happy to be here. What about you, Rob?
Well, hello, my name is Robert Higgins, and I am addicted to suits.
Welcome, Robert.
And I don't know how to stop it. There's 9 seasons of this show.
What season are you in?
I'm in season 5. Okay. And I, now that we're at this point in time, they are blowing up the show. Like, they're blowing up the premise. It seems like there's a point where I don't know, because like Supernatural also sort of did this too, where it was just like, okay, this whole thing was the thing. It was, you know, the first 5 seasons, you know, it's like, oh, we've reached a point where the boys are now have lived up to their purpose for why they were literally created.
Yeah.
Cool. And then the show continues after that. It feels like right now, like that Suits is doing the exact same thing, where they're just like, oh, this could only end one way. And now they seem to be moving towards it. And it's just like, this is season 5.
What happens in the other 4 seasons?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know if it's going to be lazy writing from now on. So far, they've been nailing it. They've been really just nailing, you know, the every sort of, like, really cheap kind of thing where you're just like, but if they did that, then these people wouldn't. And then you're like, nope, we already handled that. So far, it's been very encouraging. I just don't know how they're going to, go move forward with them blowing up the premise of the thing. So I'm like, whoa. How are you going to do that for another, like, 3-4 seasons? That's,
you're going to find out.
I am. Because I'm just wondering. So I'm a little worried, but I'm addicted to sheets. I mean, suits, not sheets. So yeah,
we have to have a talk. Yeah.
Then I also finished The Time Traveler's Wife, the book.
Oh, okay. The book. Okay.
The book, which was really good. And I'm even sadder now that Moffat didn't get a second season on the show because I had no idea that they were doing so much, so like a very faithful adaptation of the book. It was very, very faithful. And there were things that they sort of hinted at. I was wondering where they were going, but now that I know where they're from, I'm looking at them and like the stuff that they had hinted at in season one,
You're like,
like,
finish it.
yeah, I'm like, oh, that would have been so good. Oh, yeah, so I'm finishing that, and then I am stubbornly also trying to finish Gerald's Game. I went back to Gerald's Game
Oh, the
because,
book. You
yeah,
had
the
it on
book.
audio, right?
Yeah, I'm listening to it, but it's a one of the weirdest audiobooks that I've ever put into my ear holes, and B, it is horrific. Of all of the Stephen King books that I have read, and believe me, there are quite a few, this is the one book of his that I like, despite his descriptions of things, where I'm just like wondering where this book came from because it is excruciating. It is one of the hardest books that I've ever had to listen to or read. It is about, you are literally mired in a person's sexual trauma as they are handcuffed to a bed and trying to get them out of this situation. And as this person's mind eats itself and consumes itself over this trauma, and you are stuck there for the ride, for the entire ride. And it is not for the faint of heart. I don't even like, I'm wondering, like, I was understanding, like, people were like, people kept telling Flanagan like that the book was unadaptable, and I almost agree with it. I know there's a movie for it, but I feel like there's no way he nailed this. I'm so curious, and I'm going to finish the book just so I have,
Oh, I've seen the movie. I'm curious to see what you think when you watch the movie.
yeah, I'm really curious as to how they did this because, like I said, the book is horrific, and it gets things down to this minute, realistic detail. And I'm just wondering how the movie is going to be because I don't feel like the book doesn't cheat. It refuses to cheat. You know how we cheat? It does not cheat. It refuses. It's like, I'm not doing this, so there's no cheating here. Like, you can't, this was how, like, that it would happen. The sacrifice and everything of it just, ugh. Anyway. So that's what I'm writing, consuming, doing things.
Awesome. This week's resource is a variety video we have where writers discuss their writer's block. It includes Damon Lindelof.
Yeah.
No Vince Gilligan, so that's a point for him.
Oh no. You know what we say on this podcast? You know what we say?
In a world of Damon Lindelofs, be a Vince Gilligan.
Amen.
Yes.
Amen.
But perhaps some advice will help you. I think it's always helpful when I experience block to realize other creators experience it too, because sometimes I feel like a fraud. Like if I was a real writer, I wouldn't have this, which is not the case at all. Everybody can go through this. It doesn't really say anything about your character other than you're feeling a block. You're feeling, if you watch the video, they also describe it more as a writer's wall, something you have to get up and over. So hopefully some
Right.
of that will help you jostle or hop over your wall so you can continue going.
Yeah, I also, well, off topic, but sort of on topic, at least in terms of David Lindelof. Kate Tucker and I are potentially trying to scheme to get something going for Austin. And in this case of that, I was hoping that we might make a t-shirt, like, in a world of Damon Lindelof, Vince Gilligan, and then just walk around Austin like as a just to see what
Oh,
would happen.
wow. Throwing down some fighting words.
Yeah. Yeah.
What other uproarious things can we get? I mean, we could get some writers angry and fighting.
Yeah, like if you did Damon Lindelof in the Lost font. And you did Vince Gilligan in the Breaking Bad font, that would be even better. Like, I'm imagining this t-shirt and then just like walk around in an AFF with a bunch of other writers and just to get the reactions of people. I feel like that would be amazing. I feel like that would be absolutely amazing. People are like, where did you get that? I'm like, I'll tell you where.
Yeah, I was gonna say, can we just do a whole bunch just to like burn down all of our reputations? Like just have like Craig Mazin smells like fart, you know, and you know, just other things, just some of that nobody's happy by the end.
Right. And they'll all have the Screenwriting from the Trenches logo on the back, just so you know, like exactly where it came from.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, nobody likes you guys now.
Yeah, you
Because
guys
you
are
said
shitty.
everybody sucks
Yeah.
and smells like fart. Yeah. No, we should unite instead against the true farty people, which is the AMPTP.
I don't know. David Lindelof is kind of fun. Anyway, so that is our show. Screenwriting from the Trenches can currently be found on Amazon, Anchor, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and Spotify podcasts, as well as KevinLMartin.com. Our screenwriting Twitter drama theme song was written by Zach Morrison and used with his permission. And hey, we'd appreciate it if you would rate us 5 stars or leave us a review on whatever platform that you patronize. Because why, Kate Tuxford?
Algorithms.
For questions for us that we can and will answer on the show, please email me at rob@bmofo.net. You can also find us on Twitter. I am at Respectable Muffo.
I am at K underscore Tux.
Zach is at Zach Morrison 18, and these things, as well as my YouTube channel, where hopefully the Cinema Challenge series will be up and running again come Monday, where we show you how to make a movie for $1,000 in this first round. As you know, that'll all be linked in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening. We hope that you will continue to do so.
Now, stop procrastinating. Those pages aren't going to write themselves.